Mr. Buffery, reel two. I think next thing then is your call up in December 1942. What do you recall of that?
I don't remember anything much until I landed up in Butland and escaped this.
That was HMS Royal Arthur, was it? What do you remember of your training there? Well, what does it set up? How did they take you in from being, you know, arriving on the train or whatever to
Oh, well, the first thing to do was to march you from the station to the to Butland. So if you've ever been there, well, it's way out wild up on the coast, right on the coast at Skegness. And then they put you through a medical, and then having passed your medical, you were given a uniform, and the uniform included every possible item that you might not need anywhere in the world. And so it included ducks and shorts and white shoes and things of that sort. And this is in the war times. Of course, the accommodation was in three bunked chalets.
What was it? What were the chalets like?
Have you ever seen one of these films in which they use chalets? What's that one that just recently finished? I can't remember the name of it. No, Heidi High, no? Well, they got exactly the same chalet. It really was about 7 foot wide, and it was about 7 foot deep. And there was a wooden bunk, and then at the other side of a partition, there was another wooden bunk, and then you had a gangway of about 2 foot wide, and then another bunk, you see. And that was the other side of the ship. And in front, there was a wardrobe, and then the other side was a sink. And at the beginning of the block were the toilets and the showers and the rest of it. And they were absolutely basic. And it was absolutely freezing. It was 10th of December I went there. And it was quite a deep winter, in fact.
Now, if we look at the training through a sort of typical day, you know, what would a typical day start with of training?
Well, there, that was basic training, your induction. And I should think that if you were like Steve, probably if he was a sentry of a seaman, he would probably stay there for a lot longer, because we had some basic seaman instruction, like rowing a boat. About 16 of us got into a whaler and rowed it against the ropes in the swimming pool. Then there were the intelligence tests. PT, first thing before breakfast, there was a PT exercise.
What sort of PT would you do?
Outside, parade ground, shorts and singlet. I don't know if we had boots, I suppose, but we didn't have any socks. And it's exercises, running, aerobic exercises and that sort of thing. I don't think we did anything more, but it was a sort of period of something like half an hour, I suppose, that every day. And then you carry on going to breakfast.
What was the food like overall, would you say? From what you'd been used to?
Not bad. I mean, don't forget that but food outside was rationed, and it was frequently difficult for people to get anything interesting. As soon as you got into the Navy, you got white bread. Because nobody had white bread during the war. It was all homemade. And we thought that was we were akin to women.
Was there enough of it?
Oh,
what you got?
Yeah, plenty, yeah, absolutely. Yes. No problem at all.
And decent enough quality and no problem eating it?
No, I think they're good. The naval But the naval quality was quite good. There's always somebody come round, officer would come round and ask if it was if there's any problem. And I suppose most of us didn't say that we had a problem because it would be land up at the clink. But no, I think in general it was quite good.
And then your morning training. Did they do a lot of drill? I mean, basic foot drill.
Oh yes.
How did you take to that? You'd done it before, but was it different from what you'd done in the?
No, it was more rigid in the cadets than it was in the Navy. But I think really all they were trying to get people to accept the order of things rather than making sure that they're excellent at anything, because that is the induction period.
How did you take to drill? What did you think of it?
Oh, I've been used to drill quite a long time.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah. Depends whether, unless you're on a route march, well, that can be a bit tiring and a bit boring, really. Particularly in the uniform that in the cadets we wore putties and the old standard uniform and carried packs. In the Navy you had the lighter uniform, jerkin shirt, collar, hat and trousers. No, it was quite reasonable. It was cold, that was the problem.
What about seamanship training? Did you do knots and splices?
I don't remember doing knots and splices, but Steve probably would have done.
It's just you, forget Steve. No. How far did you go into seamanship? You mentioned the whaler.
Yeah, it's just that. I think there must have been a few lectures about ship, about just...
Now, what were you training as? I should have asked earlier, but...
Well, I was going to come to this. Very quickly got broken up into various groups. For example, seamen, engine room ratings, and that included engineering, stokers, electricians, and then you go into clerical size, like I don't know what they call them, stewards. And purses. So they were the main writers. That was the other one, writers.
What were you selected for?
I did this intelligence test, and surprisingly enough, I've made an application to be considered for a commission, and I got a rather daunting interview with a commander. And said, look here, we seriously need some telegraphists. We've got enough of these very commanders, these officers. So he really bullshitted me into accepting that my request would not be considered.
And what about your telegraphist training? When did you start that?
Well,
what was that?
In February, I better point this out. I've never said this to anybody else since I've joined the Navy, but I was taken as a telegraphist S. That's a telegraphist with a bracket S. Now, in the communications during the war book that I've got, it points out that these were set up in 1932 to give some aid to anti-U-boat activities in the North Atlantic. So we were specially trained to pick up any radio signal that emanated from the enemy. And the enemy was the Germans, the Italians, and the Japanese. But their training eventually consisted of being able to take that Morse at a reasonable speed.
Now, where did you go for this training, or was it done at Royal Arthur?
No, it was done at HMS Burnham 10, I think it was, at Brighton. So we were put into...
And that was February, 42.
We went down there in February, yes. The billet, we were billeted in the, what were boarding houses. We actually did our wireless training at the home for the blind at Kent Town. That'll come to me. Anyway, yes, so they cleared them out, and I did my basic Morse training.
Now, how did they train you in Morse? Because some people find it easy, some people don't. How did they actually try and get it through to you?
Oh, well, it just you spent the whole day doing Morse at various speeds. And as the speed went up and you failed, you were given a bit of a leeway. So, in other words, you didn't go up to the next stage to get onto the next fastest. It was a process of elimination, basically. But eventually, there were subtle problems because there is a psychological barrier, but there is in everything, in fact, when you're learning. You get to a stage where you don't learn anymore, or you think you're not learning anymore, but there's a lack of improvement. But suddenly, it's all there, you see. And I found this, I dragged a bit about two thirds of the way through the course, and then it suddenly, and the course really consisted of going from not being able to take anything at any speed until you could actually pick up anything, something up to about 45 words a minute.
And what equipment did they use to train you?
They had instructor classrooms where the instructor would do the transmitting, and everybody had a pair of earphones. And then the enclosed with a cube. You're also exposed to normal routines, naval routines, which consist of five groups of either letters or numbers. They're general routines, you can pick them up and be honest. So we use those, and they're moderate speed. And then as you got a bit better, one you got to was TASS, which was a Russian news agency in English. And you're up to about 70 words a minute then. Because that comes out of pretty good. It's absolutely bang on, perfect. Every dot is a one, and every dash is one, and every bar, which is, you know, the code is made up of dots and dashes. Every dash is three spaces. And it's machine generated. But it's excellent thing for bringing the muscle.
So you eventually got through this psychological barrier.
Oh, yeah, and if there were 30 of us that went down, I suppose it was about 10 of us that got through. The person who didn't get through was sent off as a stoker. The odd person who didn't get through was invalided out because he was in that case, having done this course. No, I don't know, it never affected me that much, but there was a chap down there who was a chief petty officer, and he was seconded back from the diplomatic service as a Y operator. And I spoke to him about it, and he said, well, it's not unknown that people go bonkers after having done this course. Anyway, that lasted for about...
It didn't have any effects on you, though.
I don't know. I asked my wife. I think she thinks I'm right. Yes, so that was 3 months.
Now, what else besides Morse code was there while you were there? What else signal training or telegraphist training did you get?
Oh, I suppose we got a bit of semaphore. explain. But that's part of her basic communication system. But I think that was thrown in as a stopgap, as it were.
What about Aldis lights or anything like that?
No, we don't use them.
And anything else, codes or anything like that, were you taught? Or?
No, at that stage, the emphasis was on getting your speed up and your transmission. Oh, we also transmitted. In other words, we used the key to get... you don't get anywhere near as fast. You get about 30 words a minute if you're good. And you can... with a typewriter, you can get 70 words a minute in receiving.
And anything else about your time at HMS Vernon do you remember?
Well, I know we had an officer, the CO, is a lieutenant. I think he was an RNR, no, RNBR. And he used to take us for marches, morning parade on the seafront. This isn't actually in Brighton, this is at Kent Town. St Dunstan's, actually. It's been rebuilt, knocked down and rebuilt since I was there. And we had a march along the parade, and one or two of us murmured about it being wet. And he said, "It's not going to rain, just take a tip from a seafarer." And would you believe it, we had more rain that morning than we'd ever had the whole time we were there. And another time we were there on parade, and they used to do these, the light bombers would come over from France and strafe the trains on the coast. And we had one of those attacks.
What do you remember of that?
Terrible. Died to the side of the... Well, one side of the road there were houses, the other side was the seafront, and that was the beach. But you couldn't get on the beach because of barbed wire, so we all went one way. But that was only once that happened. But other times, people didn't come back from these because they'd been on the train that had been strafed between Brighton and Eastbourne.
How did you get on with your fellow recruits, you know, trainees?
Oh, well, generally you're part of a group and you make a friendship with one or two. Usually.
Any bullying or problems?
No, I've not that I remember, no. I think people have suffered a bit from the intensity of the instruction, you know, so you're probably only too pleased with get off out somewhere, or we were in normal accommodation, not on shipboard accommodation.
And what about the instructors? How did you feel about their methods and their skills? Were they good instructors or?
Oh, I think they were excellent. Yeah. I think most of them have been employed in the diplomatic service and have come back as part of the war effort. You know, the communication between various places like the UK and any embassy abroad is handled by what we call the wire service. And in those days it used to be all Morse. And it was coded Morse. Now, of course, I think they do all sorts of other things.
And did they have a good manner in trying to deal with you?
Very tolerant, acceptable, and the objective exercise was to get telegraphers out, not to fail. But they had no failures anyway.
So they were fair tutors, and
yes.
You felt that obviously they knew their stuff.
Yes, oh yes, they all knew their stuff. Yeah. I suppose they must have come up against about half a dozen tutors at different levels of instruction.
And. What about when you did get out in Brighton, what would you do? What sort of recreations?
Oh, well, it was the dance club, wasn't it? Usually, for me, anyway.
Were you keen on dancing?
Yeah, we liked to dance, yeah. There's a big I'm not sure how they call it now. It's at Dunham, I think it is, in Brighton, by the Royal Pavilion. That was a mecca.
And did you drink?
Not very much. No.
Just what they call socially.
Yeah, half of. I didn't like it, and lager hadn't come in, so I used to have like shandy or something like that.
Was there any trouble in the town or in Brighton?
Well, it didn't affect us so much, but if you got into a group, you see, what you found, there were the whole world's army was in Brighton. Whatever nationality you could think of, they were there. Poles, Canadians, Australians, New Zealanders, Gurkhas, and they were all down there from this surrounding area because they were all waiting to go across to Europe. See, well, it didn't turn out for another year or so, at least. So there was quite a bit of conflict.
But you stayed out of it.
The Americans as well. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, we managed to steer clear.
And so you were there about 3 months. That would be from February 42 to May
42? Yeah. And then we moved to Eastbourne to St. Bede's, which was a training, an aerial training establishment, which was the next stage in training, which was devoted to various German, Italian and Japanese methods of sending messages.
Now, that was just known as St. Bede's Naval Training Establishment.
St. Bede's College is still there, in fact. It was Vernon 15 or something like that.
Another part of HMS.
Vernon was actually a signal school at Portsmouth. So the signal, the main signal establishment used to be at Limpsfield. And I think that was Vernon 2 or 3 or something like that. But each time they did another bit, you see, they added a number, a Roman number on the end of it.
And what exactly was your training? Can you take me through? Because this was a specialist training. We've not heard a lot about this. What exactly were you learning?
Well, first of all, the German and British Morse was more or less the same. Except, when I say Morse, I mean the representation of letters. Except the Germans had an additional number of letters from the 26 in the alphabet and the 10 in the numbers with what they call the umlauts. You notice the affectation of these pronunciation of a vowel with an umlaut. Well, they had about 10 of those. So a lot of letters had an umlaut in them as well, like even though they weren't vowels. So you had that. You had the umlauts and the German representation of numbers. Now, I don't remember that the numbers were the same as ours, so the Morse letter representation, for example, dot dashes and IL and B with the three dots behind is a B and that sort of thing. But when it comes to the umlauts, they added a bar on the end of it, see. And somehow they got over the problem where just adding a bar wasn't adequate because the number is always made up of 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 dots and 2 or 3 bars on the end of it. So somehow there was this extra 10 letters or so we had to get into that get up to speed again, up to 30 words a minute.
Did that take a lot of doing? Because you'd sort of had the other, you'd British ground in. I mean, did you find it difficult to adjust to the German?
When you just go back to the basic RN code system, it's either 5 letters in a group or it's 5 numbers in a group, or it's plain language. Now, you might say, well, plain language would be easiest, but in fact, plain language can produce a problem because you predict what's going to come next. And if you start with a T is it two, T-H-E, and people often predict it as being 99% T-H-E, when in fact it could be almost anything else. So you don't know how many letters are going to be in a word. So the prediction is easy to do and favourable. Now the other thing that you do, you, if you're, for example, receiving a five-letter group series, you're not writing down, and this is being transmitted, you're not writing down the first one, you wait until you get the last one, the last one of the group, and you remember all that lot as a time lag in your mind. That's the way in which you get your speed up. Because to get there, except you can't write that fast, you see. Now, when it comes to plain language, it's even more advantageous to be further back, further behind the letter that's being transmitted, because you then haven't predicted what's going to be sent. You've got it all. You've got enough letters in your mind, in your head, to be able to discern what's going to come along. There aren't many words that are more than six or seven letters long. No, yes. One of its A's, T-H-E, and that sort of thing. So to that extent, in plain language, it's the system, the technique. And of course, TAS was excellent, so we can use TAS for used plain language, and the naval codes for groups. Now, when it comes to German, all you're really interested in is writing down the letters as they come in. Now, your speed has dropped immediately, you see, because you're now thinking of what you're listening to. As time goes on, you get to know what's going to come on, because the form and the Germans are absolutely sticklers for routine. They won't do anything unless they're told. And so, to some extent, the system is very regular. It's even more regular than the Navy, the Royal Navy. But in addition to that, you have certain message forms. A Navy routine would be a particular form. A naval action would be another form, and so on. And there were various groups. The one that we were particularly interested in, from the point of view of the TELS system, was the B bar.
The what, sorry?
B bar message, double B bar, B with a bar over it. And that was a message from a submarine to the controlling off, wherever it was, Kiel or Shell or something like that.
And you could tell that by this B bar. That would be at the start, would it?
That would be the start. Yeah. Just come up and just B bar. You just get the B bar, and then you get five or six three letter groups. And that was a signal to say that he was going to attack a ship.